And welcome. It's good to see so many people here, especially many faces I haven't seen for a while and some new faces. John, are you okay there?
Yeah, fine.
Are you sure? You want to sit on the couch or?
No, I'm fine.
You're right.
I'll sit here between you.
All right. Okay, as long as you're comfortable. Astrologically, Saturn in the sky. Maybe I should give the date. Today is the 3rd of September 2013. Astrologically in the sky as we speak, Saturn is in the sign of Libra. It's been there for a year and a half. A little more than that. And Rahu, north node of the moon. Hi, Eilish.
Hi.
You want to squeeze in the couch someplace?
Yeah, I'll go for the back.
Up the back is good. And Rahu is in the sign of Libra. Rahu's the north node of the moon. Saturn is a planet that has a certain repressive influence. Saturn is a planet that represents form and structure. Sometimes the current form and structure of things isn't ideal. Because usually what happens is things go along for a while, they begin to diminish, dwindle, lose integrity, disintegrate, become corrupt, and whatever the ideal was, it begins to lose its efficacy. And at that time, people seek revolution, change. And sometimes change is harder to bring about. And sometimes change is long overdue. And this is kind of fresh in my mind only because I saw this video today that was pretty compelling. But then I got to thinking about it in terms of Rahu and Saturn. So whenever there is a revolution and new change is brought in, fresh blood, fresh perspective, new approach, new direction, a progressive approach, then everything goes along for a while with people embracing the new ideal. But after a while, that just begins to slacken. And the ideal is lost or diminishes in stature. So certainly we can look at our world and say that that's happening. That's been happening for a long time. It brought down the economy with corruption and self-interest, etc. So now, Saturn is exalted in the sky in the sign of Libra, which means it's as powerful as it can be. And therefore, it's hopeful that there may be some positive change. Or we could say it differently. We're in a time right now where change, structural change, maybe political change, maybe economic change would be possible and not just lip service. Saturn will remain in this position until November 2nd of 2014. But now Rahu's the shadow. So Rahu is whatever's not true, but we pretend it's true. Or we all nod our heads. Yeah. So Rahu's job is to uproot things and bring the truth forward. If Rahu's fear, it does one of two things. It increases fear or it decreases fear. Rahu's illusion, it increases illusion or it decreases illusion. Well, how do you decrease illusion? Only by penetrating the illusion. Only by seeing the truth. only by acknowledging truth and accepting it for what it is. That's how you penetrate illusion. If I'm looking at you like this and I say, I can't quite see what's going on, and I've got my hands in front of my face, oh, there we go. Now I see. So now we've penetrated the illusion. We've removed the veil. That's Rahu's job. So is it always easy to do that? No. That's why in medicine they have surgeons to cut stuff out that you couldn't let go of. That's turned into a cyst or a, what do you call it?
Tumor.
Malignant, benign. You couldn't let it go. So now we have to cut it out. So if you won't let it go the easy way, then sometimes it's the hard way. So now Rahu and Saturn are together in the same sign. Is that good? No. Yes. Which is it? Could be both. If it leads to healing and a reformation and a restructuring, then it's good. If we sink deeper into the mire of our illusion and our fear and our corruption, maybe not so good. So right now they are 2 degrees apart in the sky. 2 degrees. And by September 16th or 17th, today's the 3rd, they will be together.
If it's in Libra, though, and Libra being justice, would that not mean injustice?
That could well mean injustice. But sometimes injustice is the catalyst that may lead to change and justice. Right? So, you know, how far will we sink before we take steps?
Is the likelihood of it being a crescendo on the 16th?
Well, it could be. Something could happen around that time with Saturn and Rahu, because they're very slow moving planets. You won't necessarily pick the day, 16th, 17th of September, but you know, it could be on that day or after. Or, well, the US is now getting ready to invade Syria, but what we saw today is the US has had a long term concerted plan to invade and overthrow Iraq,
Sudan,
Afghanistan,
Somalia, Sudan,
Libya, Syria, and
Iran.
Iran's the last one. Why? Petrodollars. Because the U.S. has been printing money. They just print it. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just print it in your basement? They just print it.
I've actually printed it, doesn't work.
How did...
The printer actually figured out now that you're trying to print counterfeit. It'll print in black and white, but not in color.
Oh. Well, in America, they print it in color, I assure you. They print it the green, the real stuff. So... petrodollars. So the gold standard is long gone, and if you don't have a standard of real wealth upon which your paper currency is being printed, it's not good. So then they based it on petroleum and got everybody to ascribe to the dollar, and petroleum is based on the dollar. The exchange of petroleum sales, etc., is based on the dollar. And then, the dollar's been weakening and weakening. Muammar Gaddafi in Libya said, I don't think we'll do the dollar anymore. And apparently Gaddafi was a very, very enlightened leader. Everybody got educated in his country for free. Everybody got looked after. They had a very nice standard of living. He shared what was going on, the profits. He didn't just keep them all. And then he decided he'd base his petroleum exchange on the euro. Well, where is Mr. Gaddafi as we speak? He's in the grave. Because you just can't do that.
Saddam did the same.
Saddam was doing the same. So, it's interesting because this is happening and we've got Saturn and Rahu.
There was an interesting slide because it was voted against the House of Parliament.
Well, and just a few days ago, the British, in a moment of enlightenment somehow or other, the House of Parliament, the Parliament, voted down participation in this new gambit to invade Syria along with the U.S. Because the more people that join up to the U.S., it gives them legitimacy as they are busily invade all these countries. No one is more of an imperialist nation than the U.S. in the modern era. Unless you want to argue that, but pretty tough to do that. So that's the long range plan, and there's a concern if they keep ramping it up and up that there may be a nuclear situation that comes. No, I'm not predicting that. I don't know. But with Saturn and Rahu together, we're certainly in a time where these are real concerns. Perhaps when Mars joins.
When is that?
You know that now I just put
that
I put together this morning. So it's a beige color book. It's on my desk on the right there. I'll tell you when it is. Because if Mars joins, in fact, he will. He's in Cancer right now. So Cancer, Leo, Virgo, and then he'll go into Libra, and you'll have the three schoolyard bullies in the same gang. You know, when the bullies get together, when they're by themselves, you don't hear much. But when they're in groups, they get that Dutch courage.
So what's the next after Libra?
That's after Libra is Scorpio.
Yeah.
Then Saturn goes into Scorpio for 3 years, which is not encouraging. But Rahu won't be there at that time. Because Scorpio is the sign of destruction, but it's also the sign of revolution. You know. So the question then becomes, when does Mars enter Libra? Not this year. Here it is. February 4th, 2014, Mars enters Libra. And Saturn and Rahu will still be there. Here we go. This doesn't tell you when planets go retrograde, but it says that Mars, during that time, between February 4th next year and March 25th of next year, Mars is going forward motion in Libra, and then he goes, and he goes in retrograde motion. And he crosses back into Virgo, going backwards. That's the previous sign. And then, oh my goodness. And then he goes back into Libra July 14th. That's about the time Rahu moves out of there. So you're really looking at the first half of next year when those three planets will be all together for the better part of 6 months. So that will be a time to remember. Time to watch out for. So, what to do? Probably don't plan trips to the Middle East in the first part of next year. I think we're pretty well situated. I was very encouraged to hear about the British Because that means the less the British do, the safer we are sitting here. You know, trying to get my children to leave America. One's contemplating leaving, moving to Costa Rica, and the other one's thinking of moving to Vancouver. Good choices. Okay, so
you're smiling.
I'm smiling because the reason I smile is because I have deep and abiding faith in God. So I don't really care what happens because I know my life is firmly in the hands of God. And I don't worry about it. And what's the worst possible thing that could happen to me? I could die. And so what? My body dies, my soul goes on, and what's the problem? You know, they're certainly not going to tie me to a chair and waterboard me because I don't really have any real information that they need. So, you know, that sort of removes the torture part. So I'm smiling because I'm not really worried. I don't like to see the world suffer. I don't like to see people suffer. But I don't know what's going to happen. Something's got to happen. Something's got to give. The difficulty is we identify too much with the fact that we are bodies and not souls. And no matter what happens to the body, the soul is eternal. As it says here in the Bhagavad Gita, that the soul can never be burned, dried, cut by any weapon. Nothing can ever be done to the soul. And the soul is a minute spark, and it sits in the body, in the heart area. And how big is it? They actually give dimensions, not literal dimensions. They describe it as 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. That's how they describe it in the Vedas. Pretty small. Can you imagine a soul? It's giving consciousness to this entire body. It's pretty impressive. So, the Vedas are accepted as an authority because they're called aparushaya, not man-made. So when the creation takes place in the material world, we looked at all the planetary systems, we looked at all that last time around and studied the universes. If it's not man-made, then it's God-made, made by God. It doesn't, as God does not come into being, as God is eternal, by definition, God has no beginning and end, and if he does, then he's not God. Simply. So the Vedas, Veda means knowledge, means science, is, if you will, the manual or the handbook for the universe. And it tells you how everything works. The Vedas have existed since time immemorial. So here, at the beginning of the fourth chapter, Krishna says to Arjuna, Krishna and Arjuna are having a conversation right before a battle begins. Krishna's the blue one. That's him on the altar. Arjuna is a warrior, prince, king, and his relatives are on the opposing side. And Arjuna says, I don't want to fight. I don't want to kill my relatives. Even if they did usurp the kingdom that rightfully belongs to me and my brothers, his brother would be king, Yudhishthira. So at one point Krishna says, what he's doing here, because Arjuna doesn't want to fight and gets confused, and he surrenders at that point in time. He says, no, I've lost all composure due to weakness, and you know, I can't think straight. Please tell me, what is my duty? What should I do? I'm confused. So at that point, because he's in a position where he admits his confusion and he surrenders to the Guru, Krishna being the Guru, Krishna's God, but he surrenders because Krishna is his friend and teacher in the story. As Krishna begins to describe the yoga system, this whole book is simply the yoga system. What does yoga mean? Union between the soul and God. Yoga does not mean weight loss. It does not mean exercise. It's the union between the soul and God. So that is what he's describing here. So right at the beginning of the fourth chapter, he said, I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu, in turn, instructed it to Ikshvaku, which was his son. So he's going back, you know, thousands or more years. And according to, well, let me just read a little bit what he says here. At the present moment, we have just passed through 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga, the Iron Age. Universe is divided into four ages, eras or epochs, just like the seasons, similar. So the current one we are in is Kali, the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Oh, really? The age of darkness, the age of illusion. No, we don't see much of that around, do we? Look no further than the front page of the newspaper. So we have just passed through 5,000 years of the Kali Yuga, which lasts for 432,000 years. Before this, there was Dwapar Yuga, the Bronze Age, 864,000 years. And before that, there was the Treta Yuga, the Silver Age, 1,296,000 years. Thus, some 2 million years ago, Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple and son, Ikshvaku, who at that time was the king of planet Earth. So the age of the current Manu, the Manu is somebody, he's like, be equivalent to like Abraham in the Old Testament. Kind of. He's a progenitor. His job is to populate the earth. So Manu spoke the Bhagavad Gita to his disciple and son Ikshvaku. The age of the current Manu is calculated at some 305,300,000 years, of which 120 million have passed. Anyway, he's trying, so he gets to accepting that before the birth of Manu, this book was spoken by the Lord to his disciple, the sun god, Vivasvan. A rough estimate is that the Gita was spoken at least 120,400,000 years ago. So that's the time frame you're dealing with when you're dealing with the Vedas. Now, you know, the scientists will say, well, you can't prove that. Let's see your carbon dating. And then the scientists put forth various theories. And if you watch them historically, the theories stand for a while and then they fall. And that is their pattern. because mostly what they say is theoretical and then it changes over time. But the Vedas being aparushaya means they are transcendental. They're coming from a much higher place. The Vedas are written in the Sanskrit language, and Sanskrit is a transcendental sound vibration or a spiritual sound vibration. So we know about mantra, and mantra is what?
The
language of the gods. So mantras are designed to do what? To deliver the mind. Mantra. Man means mind. Tra means to deliver or to cross over. The mind is identified with matter. You have matter and you have spirit. The body is matter. It's dense. The mind is like a mirror. It can reflect matter or it can reflect spirit. It'll reflect whatever you aim it at. Whatever you focus the mind on,
you create.
You create. Or you open yourself up to learning about as well. Yeah, and you create. So when you focus on spirit, then the mind learns to transcend matter and the problems of this world. We don't identify with them. So therefore they have less of an effect. You know this to be true just if you look at your life. When you were younger, if something would happen, I don't know, whatever, something would take place, and it would really bother you, and you'd react to it. Maybe you'd overreact to it. And this would be a pattern. And now you see in your life you don't do that anymore. Why? Because you've learned, you've grown, you've matured, you don't behave that way anymore. So, by the same token, we grow in the same manner spiritually. We don't identify with material problems or respond to them in the same way. So that's what mantra is, a sound vibration. The subtlest of all the five material elements. What are the five material elements? What's the order?
Earth,
water, fire, air, ether, akash, space, sky. So when material creation takes place, what's beyond this? Mind, intelligence, manas, intelligence, buddhi, and ahankara, ego, then spirit. So a spirit comes down. The first manifestation, material manifestation from spirit is ego. I'm the guy. It's all about me. Let me tell you, it's all about me. Everything revolves around me. So get with the program. That's the ego. Okay? Are we losing you there, Eilish? She's disappearing in that corner there. So, ego. Then, intelligence, buddhi. Discrimination, discretion, knowing one thing from another, decision making. Then mind. Can mind make decisions? No. Mind says, oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, this is good, depending on what it's identified with. It's the mind. There's an expression in the Vedas that says, oh, he's riding the chariot of the mind. What does that mean? He's being carried away by the mind. This and this, oh, I think I'll do that. No, I'm changing my mind, I'm going to do this. You know how people's minds go sometimes? They're just running away on the chariot of the mind. Who knows where they're going? They don't know where they're going. They're just going. It's also a term to explain speculation, mental speculation. I don't know what's true, but this seems true today. And tomorrow, oh, that didn't seem true anymore, so maybe this next thing's true. That's speculation. It's a chariot of the mind. Mind. Then we get to the elements. Ether, Akash. And now the creation begins to manifest. And what is the symptom of ether? What is the sensory symptom of ether? In the beginning was the?
Sound.
Word. Sound. And the ether is sound. So of the five elements, what's the most subtle? Sound. That's why in the Bible it says, in the beginning was the Word. Then, from ether, it's getting denser. Air. Okay? So, in air will be sound. Which one do we add to air? Touch. Feel this? Can you feel the air? Yeah. Can you feel ether? No. But you can feel air. Can you hear it? It makes a sound. Correct? So that comes down. Air, then?
Fire.
What does fire introduce?
Another sense.
Sight. It's form. There it is. You can see fire. Can you see ether?
No.
Can you see air? Can you see fire? No, you can. No, you can't. It just dances. But there it is. It's got form. And air, this is? Sight. Ether is?
Ears.
And air is? Touch. And fire is? Sight. You can see form. Pretty cool, huh? It's his idea. I think he put a lot of thought into it. Probably took him about, what, millisecond to figure it all out. But it's good. Then the next one down is?
Water.
So water has sound. It has touch. It has form. And it introduces
taste.
Right?
You can taste.
Huh? Not a lot of taste. But it says in here, Rasoham apsukanteya. I am the taste in water.
Subtle.
What quenches the thirst more than water? Yeah. Well, it's not Guinness. It's not the black stuff, which is full of water. So water has taste. Tongue. And then we're down to the lowest element. What is it?
Earth.
Earth has sound. It has touch. It has form. It has taste. And it introduces... Smell, aroma, fragrance, right? That's what earth brings in. Nose. Five senses. Five elements. that's how it works. So how to transcend all of these? The easiest way, or the recommended way, is through sound.
Mantra.
That is the most effective way. But if you focus the mind on mantra, sometimes it says some sources say you should chant silently mantras. Pardon me. And some say you should do it out loud. Now, both are legitimate. The main thing is how to engage the mind so the mind isn't distracted. Well, the mind's always distracted. That's the truth. So the mind goes away and you need to bring it back, reel it back in. That's what the purpose of mantra is. Okay. Any questions on that? Any comments?
And if mantra bridges your mind, if that gets you down to the intellect, and yours, it bridges all the way to soul.
Well, mantra is not, we're talking about it in terms of mind, but mantra is transcendental. So that's on the soul level.
That's everything.
Yeah, that's everything. The ultimate goal is to dissolve the ego. The Vedas explain that you don't have to become spiritual. You're already spiritual. You're just covered over. So the ego covers everything over. I mean, essentially what it says is that in the spiritual world, everything is focused on God as the center. So if you agree that God's the center and you agree to act in that way, making God the center, then that's harmony. That's cosmos in the spiritual world. And if you wake up one day and say, well, you know, this isn't working for me anymore. I don't want to serve. I don't want you to be the center. I want to be the center of attention. I want to be the guy. And God, in his infinite mercy, says, okay, you can do that. But not here. You can't do it here. The rules are different here. But I have a place you can go. And you can do that in the material world. So people say, well, why would anybody want to do that? Well, I'm not sure why they'd want to do it, but God doesn't force anybody. If you say you love somebody, do you force them to do what you want them to do?
Depends on the type of love.
Yeah, I know. You're talking about tough love now, Thomas. I know. Thomas is cracking the whip with some tough love. Well, he's not doing tough love. You can do you'll work your tough love out.
You get tough love when you're down here.
Yeah, when you're down here, you get it through karma. That's tough love. But that you create yourself. I put up a blog post the other day. Here in the material world is sometimes compared to school and sometimes a prison house. But whether you're in school or in prison, you are never meant to remain there indefinitely. If you're in school, you're supposed to learn the lessons and graduate, and now you're done with school. If you're in prison, you do your time, hopefully you get rehabilitated, and then you will be set free. So the same thing is true for your existence down in the material world. Same concept applies. You can be here as long as you want, or you can get out of here quickly if you have the desire. But you really have to have a very compelling desire to get out. Okay. What everybody searches for primarily in the world is what?
Love.
Happiness.
Peace.
But we look for love. And when we're in a state of love or in a state of loving or a loving relationship, generally we find happiness or the kind of happiness we seem to want. It doesn't always give peace, but that's what we're looking for. But any kind of love down here in this world is always temporary. When your love is focused on the self, what's the difference between lust and love?
One's conditional.
Love must be unconditional. And lust means what's in it for me. I'll do what you want as long as I get what I need. So the highest concept, according to yoga philosophy, is to enter into a loving relationship with God in an unconditional loving relationship, in which case you're trying to please God by your love, by your actions, by your devotion, by your dedication. And that's real love in the sense that it's eternal, it doesn't end, and it's transcendental. Does that mean he gets loved, you get nothing? No, it's a reciprocation. And we, like God, love to be in loving relationships. We seek them out everywhere. Not just with a partner or a spouse, with children, with friendships, with the guy at the spa that you talk to. Whenever you go in, you call him by name, and you make jokes, and you have a few laughs. That's a loving relationship. You're always happy to see each other. It can be done on any level with the postman. These are loving relationships. We like that. God likes it too. He's no different, but really we're no different. He's the prototype. That's how he likes to conduct himself. So in similar manner, so do we. So the more we enter into that, the more we reduce ego, and the more we lift ourselves into spirit and expressing ourselves as soul or as spirit, the more fulfilled we become. Does anybody want to give an example of that in their life? Don't all talk at once. No? Nobody? Anybody had that experience? I know you have.
You know what you were saying about the small talk, that you always chat to someone in the shop? Definitely sometimes if you're in a bad mood or something, sometimes when you just have like kind of light encounters of people where you're just friendly with something, it can really like change how you feel in a day or like there's something going on. It's really good. Somebody being friendly and nice. Like you're driving out of a car park and somebody goes, here, I have another half an hour off my ticket if you want this, or
yeah.
Things like that. Just
yeah.
Makes a big difference.
Makes a big difference. So that's a good point. Let's talk about it from this point of view. With words, Because words are extremely important. What you say to people, because mostly what we do is talk. Even if it's brief. Like at this bar. We speak. So words are generally, they fall into two categories. It's a blessing or a curse. That's what you can do with your words. Maybe there's some neutral exchange in there. But generally, it's you're either blessing or you're cursing. So as much as possible, our words should be a blessing. As your example, somebody gives you, I've got a half an hour left in my parking ticket. Here, you take it. You use it. It's a blessing. So we should strive as much as possible to make our lives a blessing. It's very popular here in this country. God bless you. Very popular here. Now, in America, where I live most of my life, not as popular there. But very popular here.
In the country,
yeah.
Not so much in the city.
Yeah, fair enough. Too busy in the city. Mm-hmm. Too much going on. What were you saying to me the other day about people in the city?
No, it was a guy from Dublin. He was on the radio. He'd moved down to Wexford. And he said that he's been asked by the radio DJ, what's the difference between living down there and why would a dub want to be in Wexford? He said the difference is that in Dublin, everyone's in a rush to go somewhere, but they're not really going anywhere. They don't have time to talk to you. Where down in Wexford, they'll stop and talk to you, but they genuinely do have to go somewhere. That's the difference.
Even around here, where we live, we've lived here now for 5.5 years, which is a pretty good stretch. And when we drive around here, all of our neighbors, we all wave. But when other people come in from outside who don't live around here, they don't. They don't wave. They don't even look at you. We wave. They don't. So there you go. Tourist.
Terrorist.
They bring their mentality, their city mentality.
Yeah. They bring their driving mentality too. On our one lane roads. Let's read a few of these. In the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Arjuna at this point figures out, you know, I thought you were just my friend and my cousin. He and Krishna are related. And then he begins to realize that Krishna's God, because he's telling him all about it. He says, many lifetimes both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them. You can't. Which is, you know, I'm God, you're not. He doesn't say it, but that's what that means. You have consciousness of one body, the one you're in. God has consciousness of every body simultaneously. Tough to manage, I would think. So Arjuna says, Krishna tells him a few more things, then Arjuna says, please tell me in detail of your divine powers by which you pervade all these worlds and abide in them. How many universes are there? Just one, right? The one we're in, right? And how many planets in this universe have life on them? Just one, right? The one we're on, right? Just this one. It's all about, this is the me, this is the ego. mentality. Just whatever is happening, this is it. There couldn't possibly be anything else. They explain that humans are subject to the four flaws. What are the four flaws all humans are subject to? Yeah. First one, making mistakes. Do you ever make a mistake? I thought I had made a mistake last year, but I was wrong. So we all make mistakes. Even when we try hard not to make mistakes, we make mistakes. Invariably illusioned. We can get fooled, we can get tricked, we can get cheated. We can mistake things. For the longest time, people on Earth thought that the Earth was flat. And if you said the Earth was round, I think there was like serious consequences for that at the time. I guess this was... So we're invariably illusioned. We have imperfect senses. So if I look up in the sky and see the moon, I can go like this. I can put my fingers right around the moon. So how big is the moon? This big. It looks this big if I look at it. Is it that big? No. So our senses are imperfect. Well, you can say, I've built the Hubble telescope. It is the biggest telescope on Earth. And you're looking through it with imperfect senses. So what did you discover? Something a little bit more than what you know, but you're still, your senses are still imperfect. And then the fourth one, cheating propensity. We have an inclination to cheat. Especially if we think we can get away with it. It's okay, no one will know. Can I copy off your paper? No one will know.
Can we treat some good exams?
You know, I have noticed that in this country, having been, you can correct me if you like, but this is my observation. For 800 years, you were occupied by the British.
Correct.
And anything you could pull over, pull the wool over the British eyes, and you can get away with and cheat them, would have been a victory. Understandably so. Makes sense.
Even to this day.
Even to this day, when you're no longer under British subjugation, this mentality of, you know, hey, I cheated the system or I put one over, still seems to be in vogue. That's what I've noticed. It makes sense.
What are you saying?
That's all I'm saying. Is it true or is it not true?
No, it's not true.
Yeah. So what I'm saying ultimately is it'd be better not to have that mentality.
But isn't that because of the occupation and the disassociation of our ancestors and spirit?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I said it like I did. So it may have been practical and useful in order to survive under those circumstances. Now it becomes a habituation, a habit that we formed to act like that. Okay, fine.
Psychosis.
Well, not even a psychosis. It's a habit.
Yeah.
It's a bad habit. I wouldn't call it a psychosis. So now, because it's not necessary, it's good to break the habit.
If you look at it in terms of how you related with it yourself, you were laughing about how you cheat.
Yeah.
It's not. That's the way we cover it up, but it's with a sense of humor.
You know yourself.
It's a survival mechanism.
Yeah, which makes complete sense under occupation. Yeah,
but the survival aspect of living doesn't work in living. When you're trying to live, bringing the rules of survival into living won't work. You have to change your rules.
Oh, yeah.
So hence why survival skills still at the ready instead of living.
Yeah.
That's why we're not at peace with it.
Yeah.
Learn new skills.
We like
you know, you collect all the old ones.
You have to learn the new skills and let go of the old ones.
Let go of the old ones and then introduce new, because if you consider you're 100% full, you can't create or recreate something that there's no space for it. So you have to let go to receive.
And fill the vacuum.
Exactly. Well, don't allow a vacuum. Hmm.
Well, let's take one. I'm sorry?
We like ladies.
Yeah, no, the first thing that happened to me when I moved to Ireland is I got cheated big time by my landlord. And I didn't even realize I was being cheated until a year down the line. You know yourself now. The wink and the nod. Yeah, no, he owes me good.
It's like a, you know, it's par for a course.
Yeah, no, that's what you do. I mean, I got away with it. The guy didn't see. Is what he's thinking. Anyway, I was going to say, now a positive side of that, because Irish people are creative and musical, singing, dancing, playing music, which is also what you're known for, would have been a great boon to help you get through. Survive occupation.
I'm drinking.
Well, I'm not mentioning that. And now that the occupation is over, that can continue, because that's not a negative. And that's, I think, very much part of the psyche of the people. Well, the drinking, that's a different thing, but okay. There are millions of universes. That's the answer. Millions. According to the Vedas, there is life on millions of planets, not just this one. Recently, speaking of Canadians, former Defense Minister of Canada, you can watch him on YouTube.
Yeah, he was in Parliament when he was talking.
He was in Parliament, in British Parliament?
Canadian Parliament,
yeah. But he's the former guy. He's not the current guy.
But the footage was...
The footage was of the Canadian Parliament, and he was the Defense Minister addressing Parliament. You can see it on YouTube. And he said, this is, how old is it? Between, no more than 10 years old.
Oh, no, it's pretty recent.
More recent than that? 5 years old. It's recent. He said, for many years now, they have been covering up the fact that there are aliens. And the aliens have been coming down in their spaceships and interacting with us. He says, that's been going on. And all these governments, especially the U.S., are denying it. And so, oh no, that never happened. We've got corpses, we've got people in formaldehyde, aliens, we've got crashed spaceships, and we've been working with them for years. They've been taught us this and that, and now he actually came out and admitted it. Like all these people, the UFO people, you know. Yeah, it's all true. It's been going on. So that, I mean, that's proof positive.
The reason he was saying it was the fact that he thought that people were big enough and grown up enough.
Yeah.
Because, you know, eventually you don't have to believe in Santa anymore, and you grow up, you have to know the truth.
Yeah. And they treat you like, you know, like you can't handle it. You wouldn't be able to deal with it. Why?
Because they've decided that.
Yeah, because they've decided that. I went to Sedona, Arizona. I've been there maybe 3 times. I think this was the last time I was there. One of my clients gave me a house, a round house, to stay in, and next to her house. So I went out on the deck that night, first night, and I looked up in the sky, and I saw this circle of colored lights, and it was stationary. It didn't move. Well, what vehicle in the sky do you see that's stationary? It wasn't stars. It wasn't a satellite. You can see satellites sometimes coming by. And then I saw little vehicles, lights, coming to and fro, going from it and to it. And it just... UFO. That's what I said to myself. That's a UFO. So then I went into their house for dinner. And I said, over there in the western sky? Yeah. Did you see it? Uh-huh. The mothership? Uh-huh. Is that the mothership? That's the mothership. Did you see any of the little ships going back and forth? Yeah. That's been there now for a month or so, 2 months. I don't know why they like the desert so much, but you know, this is Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada. That's where a lot of that stuff goes on in America. You know.
Corrosion.
Yeah. What's to do with corrosion?
Dry air prevents corrosion for electronics.
Oh, uh-huh. See, he knows. Because he used to fix airplanes.
Isn't that an outer spaceship that would be like corrosion wouldn't even be part of the equation?
Depending on the technology.
Magnetic field as well.
Yeah, and that's how they've traveled with magnetic fields, no?
That's how electronic works.
Okay.
So magnetic fields are magnetized because of that.
Okay.
Because it reduces the density of the atmosphere.
Humidity,
yeah. Can you go?
Let's see. You know any of your fellows?
Now, how does he know that? So he says, how should I meditate on you, Lord? In what various forms are you to be contemplated? Tell me again in detail, O Janardana, of your mighty potencies and glories, for I never tire of hearing your ambrosial words. And then he says, yes, the Blessed Lord said, yes, I will tell you of my splendorous manifestations, but only of those which are prominent, O Arjuna, for my opulence is limitless. Who talks like that? I am the Self, O Gudakesha. He calls him Gudakesha. I am the Self, seated in the hearts of all creatures. I am the beginning, the middle, and the end of all beings. Who talks like that? What does Gudakesha mean? He calls the prince Gudakesha. It means conqueror of sleep, conqueror of lethargy. I am the Self, O Gudakesha. So what's he saying here? In order to know the Self, you must conquer your lethargy, your sleep. You must become
awake.
That's what he's saying. Just by calling him a name. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. Adityas is the demigods or celestials. Of the lights, I am the
sun,
the radiant sun. And among stars, I am the moon. I am the moon. Right? Among the demigods, I am Indra, king of the demigods. I didn't expect you to know that one. Of the senses, I am the... See, I told you to be quizzed on what I said earlier. So you got the five senses. What's just beyond the senses? No, that's sound. What's beyond the senses? What's the king of the senses? The mind. The mind. The mind controls the senses, or the mind becomes controlled by the senses. Like most of us running around trying to please ourselves by following the dictates of the senses. Right? So, in living beings, I am knowledge. I am knowledge. What's the difference between humans and animals? What are the four things that humans and animals have in common? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Defending, in human speak, making a living. Looking after yourself. Animals literally defend in many cases. They make a living. So these four things we have in common. But this chetana, knowledge, discretion, understanding, we have this. Animals don't. Because animals all act in accordance with what?
Their nature.
What else do we call it?
Instinct.
Cats act like cats. Do cats act like dogs? You ever see it? Never. You see a dog act like a cat? No. It never happens. Can you act like a dog if you want? Oh, absolutely. Do we recommend it? No. People do it. People can act like animals. Can people act like gods, angels? Yeah. Right? We have a choice. Animals act like animals. So this is chetana, knowledge. Of the Rudras, I am Shiva. Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, or Yakshas, I am Kuvera. Now, the Yakshas are a small group of beings, and they're not all that attractive. And they have a one-track mind. And that is money. And their king is Kuvera, who is known in the universe as the Lord of Wealth. He's the guy kind of in charge of wealth. So someone else has drawn a parallel. This is the land of the Yakshas. Here. This, yeah. And who are the Yakshas? Leprechauns. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And they're tricksters, and they're kind of, you know, misshapen. I don't want to say they're misshapen, but they're short and, you know. Yakshas. They may exist other places, but here, in this country, there's a lot of mysticism. And the people can see things like that. They see the fairies. Of course, I know. Nowadays, you say, yeah, he's off with the fairies. but this was more perceptive to people who are more heart-centered. In this country, people are more heart-centered compared to, go to England. Well, there's a heart-centered bunch for you. Not. They're head-centered. Go to Germany. Head-centered. Go to America. Both, but leaning toward head. Go to Canada. Heart-centered. Right? Go to Australia. More here. The Australian accent is predominantly Northern Irish. That's where it's come from. And I've concluded this by having been to Australia so many times.
You're trying to say that most of the convicts came from the north?
Well, I'm not even mentioning convicts, because most of those people were not convicts. They were just, we're taking your land and somehow you're a convict, so we're going to put you on a boat.
Rehabilitation.
Yeah, you need rehabilitation for what? Living in my house? Yes. We are appropriating your house. The mountains, I am Meru. Of priests, know me to be who? Brihaspati. Who's Brihaspati? Chief priest among the gods.
Jupiter.
Jupiter is Brihaspati.
Is it the same in Greek mythology or no?
No, it's different. Brihaspati, the Lord of Devotion, it says here. Don't see that in the Sanskrit thing. Of bodies of water, sarasam asmi sagaraha. Of bodies of water, I am. No.
The ocean.
The ocean. What's the most impressive body of water you've ever laid eyes on? The ocean, of course. Of great sages, I am Bhrigu. Do you know Bhrigu? Have you done the Bhrigu? Sangita? Bhrigu Fal? Where did you do it? Maharashtra? Where did you go? Which place? Which town? In Mumbai or someplace else? Did they give you the Bhrigu Fal from the book? It's something. You're not saying much. No? Bhrigu is a sage. And here he says, of all this, and there's many sages, higher sages, higher beings. And generally they are the sons of, many of them are the sons of Brahma, the creator. Brahma is the creator. We spoke through this last time. In the universe, there are three forces. Creation, maintenance or protection, and destruction. You see this everywhere. Things come into being, they last for a while, and they perish. They come to an end. This is everything. This is businesses, it is people, it is projects, it is flowers, it is everything. That's the law. On the big scale, there are three higher beings in charge of these three functions. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Brahma is the creator, or the position of creator. That's a Brahma there. If you see this carving, you see on the lotus flower coming from the navel of Vishnu is Brahma. He's the creator. Vishnu is lying on the serpent couch. Vishnu is the maintainer. Shiva is not in that picture. The person on the right is Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. Lakshmi. And the Bengalis, how do they say Lakshmi? Loki. they say Loki. And if you're fortunate, you are lucky. That's where it comes from. Lucky. Loki, Lakshmi, goddess of fortune. We call it Lady. Where are you going to get this stuff? So, creation, maintenance, destruction. Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and Shiva destroys. Bhrigu is a sage. There are certain places in India you can go for a Bhrigu follow, Bhrigu reading. It is a book. Have I done this? Yeah. I've been there a couple of times. This is not a static book. It is a dynamic book. And I've actually witnessed that. And usually my experience has been you have to let them know ahead of time that you're coming. And then if they tell you to come at a certain time, like during the bright fortnight of the moon in the month of Chaitra, then at that time a fal will be found for you, because the book is like this. There's two or three volumes like this. So they sit there and they go like this. That's what they do. And they look for your name. Everybody's in the book. Everybody. Are they in the book all the time, every day, your name? No. Have I seen that happen? Yeah. It'll be there today. It won't be there tomorrow. That's what I mean. The book is dynamic. So then they find your name. They want the names of your parents. Oh yeah, here they are. Names of the parents. Maybe the town. Sometimes they find the town where you're born. And they give you the full. The full is the reading. The consultation. What does it mean? Sometimes it's your actual birth chart. Sometimes it's a prashna phal. It's a question chart of where the planets are in the sky at the moment. So when I went, first time, I was told to come bright fortnight of the moon in the month of Chaitra, which was April. So I went. I had just been to India in January, went home, came back, so I could have this experience. And they let me, and I was into astrology. So she says, yes, come tomorrow, we will do your full. I said, did you find it? Yes, we have found it. So it wasn't my birth chart, it was a question chart. The question chart means where the planets are in the sky at the moment. So I said, may I hold the book? May I look? Well, I can read Sanskrit. I can read this. So here I am, you know. Okay. I wrote it down. It gave the chart, you know, where the planets were in the sky. And then I went afterwards and calculated exactly. This was correct for the way the planets were at that moment when I sat down in front of the lady who was the Vajak, who was going to speak. And it was, for me, it was kind of a life-changing experience. He told me four lifetimes, this one and three others beforehand, and what would happen by the end of this lifetime. So I thought, that's very nice. And some days they can find things, some days they can't. Then they tell you to come another day. Now, does that mean that it's there and they can't find it? Or does that mean that it appears when he says it appears? So that's Bhrigu. So he's a very, very elevated sage. This kind of thing in India is commonplace. you know, here we go, oh my God. India is just, that's how things work. Because of the spiritual nature of the place. Okay. Only a few more. Of vibrations, I am what sound?
Om.
You read this. Om. I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, or spiritual practices, if you like, what am I? Japa. What is japa? That's japa mala. That's japa. What do you do in the Catholic religion? Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Where do you think they got that from? You think they got it from the Catholics? I don't think so. Catholics got it from them. That's japa. Rosary is the mala. Japa mala. That's the one. Of immovable things, I am. What? The mountains, yeah. Which ones? Correct. Boy, there's no stumping you people. Too sharp. Of trees, I am the Ashvata. What is it? People. They don't know what that is. I know. What is it? In English. The banyan. Banyan tree. Banyan tree. You don't know banyan? That's with all the roots coming down.
That's what?
Ashwat.
Ashwat, yeah.
Yeah. That's the banyan tree. There's not people?
People.
Oh no, this is Ashwat.
Yeah, Ashwat.
Yeah.
Ashwat is people. But it has
it's different.
Yeah. Trees are different.
Yeah, okay.
Banyan wood is the banyan trees which would have the roots hanging down.
Yeah, roots hanging down.
Yeah.
Have you not been to the east? Oh, you can see them all over. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, those are the biggest trees. They're awesome. Yeah. And these are in India. They put like a platform around them, around the base. They throw up a round cement platform, and they paint tilak on the trees, the sacred markings they paint on the trees, like a red and then white on either side. Mm. Have you ever seen?
Mm. Yeah.
It's very common.
That's sacred, yeah.
Very sacred.
Yeah.
Very sacred. Among men, I am the? Among men, I am the what? The king. This guy's getting them all. I'm the king. Divine right of kings. What is the highest form of government? You can disagree. Enlightened monarchy is the highest form of government.
Is that what England is?
No one said anything about England.
I'm just asking the question.
No. Enlightened monarchy. An enlightened soul, an initiated soul, becomes king, empowered by God.
Does that exist?
Not that I've seen. No.
That's why I asked.
No. It doesn't exist. This is Kali Yuga, Iron Age. It doesn't exist. There are no qualified kings or queens in this age. Unless you can find one. But no. So in lieu of that, we have democracy. And democracy means give everybody a vote. Everybody who doesn't know anything about government and who to select, vote for people who have no qualification to be in government.
Yeah.
That's democracy.
I can't know what to do.
It sounds like a winning combination to me.
The guy's fine information. They're all right.
Yeah, as long as you... I need planning permission. Can you organize that for me?
That's a good reason.
Not a bother. of weapons, I am the higher, higher, higher. Lightning, thunderbolt. Thunderbolt. Pretty cool, huh? Of cows, I am the Surabhi cow. What's a Surabhi cow? Wish fulfilling cow. Fulfill all this, not just milk. Give you anything you want.
It's a good cow.
Why is the cow sacred?
Support a human. By
because it is a symbol of a mother. It is a symbol of the mother. And how do you treat the mother? Kill it, yeah. Slaughter it in an industrial slaughterhouse, correct. Got it first time. With respect, with honor. Why is the cow respected in that way? Because she gives milk. And from the breast, you go to cow's milk. And it develops the brain, fine brain tissue. You don't kill the mother, even a symbol. What else do we call the mother commonly here? Mother what?
Mother Earth.
Mother Earth. Mm-hmm. And what are we doing to her?
Killing her.
Oh, we are busy working overtime on her. Raping, pillaging,
fracking,
drilling,
bombing, blowing.
There's another place that says blowing up, bombing. There's another place that says that taking the oil out of the earth is sucking out her lifeblood.
And the same with the gold seams is the veins of the nervous system. The ores.
Yeah. Well, in the Vedas, gold is recommended. Gold is a spiritual element and is to be used.
Yeah, but they're not like over the top like they are now.
Yeah, well, you see, back in the day, the gemstones, gold, etc., precious gems, semi-precious gems, were readily available. You didn't have to drill and mine in the way they do now. These would be found in riverbeds. And, you know, lying around a seam of this, a seam of that. It was the earth readily provided it because she was being treated like the mother, respectfully. Now, if we could reinstitute that, that would be something, but I don't know. Okay. Questions, comments?
In the duality of life as it stands, when will that possibility of duality merge into the triune, which is freedom, choices, balance? Not a short question.
The duality of life, you mean black, white,
and negatives and positives.
Yeah.
And the extreme manipulation of the negatives in our world, when will it come to equal balance?
When the dualities are made equal at that time, well, I'll tell you. I'll quote this. This will answer your question in a different way. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na shochati na kankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So, what does that say? When one has achieved the state of spiritual understanding, or when one has achieved spirit, Brahma-bhuta, the state of spirituality, spiritual being, that is Brahma, spirit. Prasannatma, his atma, soul becomes prasanna, always happy, always joyful, always satisfied, nothing's missing. In that state, na shochati, na kankshati. Na shochati, never laments. There's no lamentation. There's no sorrow. There's no disappointment. The kangshati desires what? Nothing. No lamentation, no desire. These are the symptoms. Nashochiti, nakangshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Sarva bhuta, of all living beings, how does he become toward all living beings? He becomes sama, equal. This isn't. So, no lamentation on this side, no desire on this side. So, the dualities are neutralized. Equal toward all. Not that this thing is better than that thing. A clod of earth, a lump of gold. What's the difference? Nothing. No difference to you. Mad bhaktim labhate param. My devotee, mad bhaktim. He becomes my devotee. That's what he says. That person becomes my devotee. He becomes devoted to me. And he, labhate, he achieves param, the ultimate destination, which is me, God is saying. So, that's how it works. So when the dualities are neutralized, you've transcended. You, here in this world, you'll never see the dualities neutralized. My guru used to laugh at the United Nations. You know, it's like, what's united about it? All it is a bunch of nations trying to get, you know, their pound of flesh, get their needs.
But if you look at the building, it says UN, United Nations, on United Nations.
Yeah, ununited. If it's united, how many flags would you see out front? How many?
It does exactly what it says on the building.
Ununited. You'd see one flag.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. In you go to a country, how many flags are flying in that country? One, because it's supposed to be united. United Nations is what?
United.
Yeah. Ununited. It says even on the building. UN. Ununited.
United, it says UN, United Nations.
Yeah.
On United Nations.
Disunited.
But that's the nature of the world, isn't it?
Well, this is it.
That's you've got.
This is
the negative black void.
This is how this is. If you think that this is going to change, this is the nature of this world. So I'm not saying you shouldn't try to institute change, but it's never going to fully happen here. People say we're going to wipe out hunger. How? You're trying to say you're going to wipe out the karma of this group of people who are destined to be hungry. How are you going to wipe out their karma? How?
Resistance creates persistence.
Okay, well, when you organize all that, we will follow you. And we will wave your flag.
That's what I'm saying, you can't crusade against it.
On each side, if you go, because either isn't right or wrong.
Correct.
Only the center is right.
Correct.
How can it be right if it's in the center?
Because it's transcendent.
It's all balance.
It's the balance. It's the fulcrum.
Truth is balance.
Yeah.
It's not right.
No, but God is truth.
But God is right and wrong.
Yeah, that's right. God does not judge.
Right and wrong.
Correct.
That's right.
Correct. He accepts both.
He accepts both. He accepts the shadow and he accepts the light.
Yeah.
So the way you do it is that's what transcendence means. Stop pissing and moaning about this one and that one. Stop judging and accept it all with a loving heart.
It's a game.
Now when you can do that, you are Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nashochati Nakangshati, and you are Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu. You're equal to everyone. So now that you can start on yourself immediately. You don't have to wait for to be led by
Well, what I said about the resistance, if they fight world hunger, they create resistance to it. Resistance creates persistence.
Yeah, correct.
They're opposition.
Just like they're fighting, they got the war on drugs. Oh yeah, well that's working wonderfully.
The fact is having that they started harvesting their genetically modified crops, and then that led to more people and because there's more people needing more food, and there's enough food for the actual population. If nature just balances it out, when you try to get rid of the negative and increase the positive, it just doesn't seem to.
To do nothing.
But working with nature, maybe, instead of trying to modify nature.
Oh, maybe we should change Irata Madhava just for the completion.
Yeah,